from the front line, Dr. Hammond and I will be discussing the recent land reform hearings. We'll be reporting back on the parliamentary hearings on expropriation without compensation. So Dr. Hammond, you were at the one here in Cape Town on Saturday. What did you see?
Fraud, failure and farce. I must say, what a circus. Well, actually, that would be an insult to the circuses. It was unbelievable. What we witnessed was classic communist agitation propaganda.
What on earth is agitprop?
Agitprop is actually the name of a department they had in the Soviet Union. The Communist Party of the Soviet Union actually implemented what they called agitation propaganda. They had a department called the Department of Agitation Propaganda, and they shortened it to agitprop. And what it means is you need agitation and propaganda, and the two work together in order to communicate their message. So agitation, including riots, strike, mob tactics, all the way down to terrorism and assassinations if necessary, was part of the propaganda. So in order to persuade people to do what they wanted, they would do classic rent-a-mob busing and tactics. For example, it's the communists write about this, how in order to obtain a desired end, like, for example, hijacking a labor union, for example, which was the most important thing for them, it's the first working group, they would bus in a whole lot of people who weren't necessarily from that area. They'd swamp the labor union so that they could then overwhelm the people to vote for one of their candidates to be on the committee to represent the labor union. If this didn't work, then they would start thug tactics, beating up people, starting fights, cause most people to leave, or drag it out with long, 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 dragged out, boring, etc., until almost everyone's left, and then have a vote at midnight, or 2 a.m. even, when there's only the hardcore of cadres who've specifically been busted, and they now elect this new committee who want what they want. So agitation propaganda is a communist tactic. Agitation propaganda, agitprop.
Sure.
So what we saw on Saturday was agitprop, or active measures is another term the communists used, where they had a rent-a-mob busing in of agitators, and it was so blatant you couldn't miss it. Vast amounts of people wearing the red EFF jackets and red berets, and ANC supports wearing ANC t-shirts and so on, and they outnumbered us. They overwhelmingly completely swamped the whole area. Now, just understand that these hearings are meant to hear from the people, and they advertised, come, we want to hear from the people. You'll each get 3 to 5 minutes. Well, when we got there, we told no one is going to speak more than 3 minutes. Well, if you take 5 hours and you divide that by 3 minutes, well, what you're going to get is 100 people, 20 an hour could speak 3 minutes if no one went over time and if everything went smoothly, which it didn't. As it so happens, less than 80 people could speak and allocate 5 hours because they had a long introduction where everyone, the 23 members of parliament up on the platform representing the so-called committee, introduced themselves with all kinds of screaming and shouting by their supporters. And yes, of them, 12 of the 23 members were EFF.
The over 50%.
Economic Freedom Party, which some call the Everything for Free Party. So,
like the KFC that they were getting paid to
Yes, with. Yes. The EFF bust in the people for free KFCs. And it was obvious because quite a few people, you looked at them and thought, some of these are just teenagers. And when I looked around this venue, now the venue was swamped with people wearing yellow ANC or red EFF outfits, so you could readily see. And in a moment an EFF or ANC member of parliament stood up, say something, or one of the people on the floor, you saw them jumping up like on cue and roaring, shouting, so that, you know, EFF person would shout a slogan like, "I'm a handler," "Away to," and so on. And they had all sorts of other things they'd shout, right down to "Bring me my machine gun," and "Kill a Boer, kill a farmer" was even heard. So you'd had total agitation there, and it was like a whole lot were there to knee-jerk. The moment somebody shouts something like a mindler, they'd all leap to their feet screaming, "Away to," and so on. But in between, you saw a lot of them were just sleeping in the chairs. So many were evidently not there to listen or speak, but just to occupy chairs to make sure others couldn't get there. So I was astounded to find that even those people had arrived 3 hours before. I heard from people the doors were only opened at 11, but people were arriving at 8 already. And when they arrived at 8, they were ready. Thousands bust in. Thousands. And there was no space. So many, I met people who were like town councillors and others outside never managed to get through the front door. And many people, I was just astounded. There were so many people I recognized outside, very few inside, because very few even got through the front door. First thing you saw was there was something like over 200 policemen around. It was staggering. Huge amount of police, huge amount of armored cars and police cars and everything else, including Metro Police and the SAPS and others, and even traffic. So you get there, and first of all, you see a lot of police and vehicles. And then you see a lot of EFF and ANC, with banners, no less, including a whole lot of posts of with a hatchet, an axe, with "you deserve this."
What?
An axe dripping with blood. And there's a whole lot of those posters.
Yes, and in fact, Aliska, who was with you, said to me that she saw one of these posters and was a bit taken aback. And a lady that was standing next to her saw Aliska's facial expression and said, "Yes, you deserve that." And so there was intimidation going on.
There's a lot of intimidation. So now I've been a missionary for 37 years, mostly in war-torn areas, and I've ministered in communist countries, and I've been in communist prisons, and I've been in terrorist bases, and I've been under fire and all of that. So, you know, maybe it was a little easier for me, but it was one of the most unpleasant experiences. It was like being under fire for hours, because you had this relentless hostility, and you felt surrounded by people who hate you and who shouting out all kinds of insults and threats. So you can imagine how, if that is a burden for somebody who's used to being in war-torn areas and working amongst communists, what must mean for the average person? I think some of the people who went there were traumatized, because to see so much hostility and to hear so many threats and to see so much vile propaganda. Now, just take, for example, the fact that in a recent by-election in the Cape, in Brackenfell, end of last year, the Democratic Alliance, the DA, got 70% of the votes. The Cape Party got 19%+ of the vote. The Freedom Front got 9% of the vote. The ACDP got about 1%, and then the ANC got 0.1%. The EFF got less than 0.01%. Now, Brackenfell is a predominantly Afrikaans-speaking community in northern suburbs, but still, we know that the vast majority of people in the Cape vote DA, and quite a lot of others support the Cape Party and the Freedom Front and the ACDP, and a minority support the EFF. In fact, the EFF countrywide only got, 6% in the last national elections? That's countrywide. And they get a lot less than that in the Cape, a lot less. Yet the EFF had most of the say. Most of the 80-odd people who got to speak in those 5 hours of this hearings on Saturday were EFF, who described themselves as Marxist, Leninist, communist, and so on. And they plainly were, with their red shirts and the hammers and sickles and the fist of resistance and all that, and all of their slogans. So not only that, but the EFF were more than half of the parliamentary committee that was sitting up there. How does that happen? What was also astounding is we're in the Cape. I would have expected to hear the DA had more than half of what to say. As far as I know, I did not hear one DA person speak. But another person who attended said, no, he did hear one person identified himself as DA speak. Okay, I must have missed that. But so the DA was absent. They weren't even on the veranda. It just, you didn't hear them. So if the DA was present, they weren't given a hearing. You would have got the impression that the vast majority of people in the Cape are EFF supporters, which they're not. I don't even know if they get 3% of the vote in the Cape, if that.
Yeah.
And the ANC are definitely not a majority party in the Cape, despite them trying for 24 years and bussing in their people. And yet they also got quite a lot to dominate. But it was an EFF show from the platform and from the floor. Now that really is agitation. And then the other thing that was interesting is they didn't have any kind of rhyme or reason of how they chose you. You'll sit down. Everyone's got to sit down. Right. Now, I'm going to choose 5 women from this block and then 5 men. I want just the women to raise their hands and want to speak. Interesting enough, only a few of the people in each block raised their hands. So a lot of people weren't there to talk anyway. They were just there to use the seats. And then he would say, the one wearing the red beret, the person there wearing the yellow ANC t-shirt, yes, this person with the red beret. And it was like this all the time. And like, you've got to be kidding. And it's not that any EFF person said anything original. They rambled, they often couldn't talk properly. Many of them spoke in Khoza. Very, very, very few even communicated in English. And yes, what we heard was meaningless political rhetoric. We heard slogans. And there was, Amandla, wait, Amandla, wait. Yeah, that's not exactly communication. So we expected discussion, evidence, case studies, reasoned.
As you would expect in a parliamentary discussion.
You would have expected, but then you would have been wrong. Because what it was most of them, and this chairman kept saying, the man with the red jacket, the man with the red beret, the one with the yellow ANC t-shirt. It was, you know, if this was a Monty Python comedy, it would have been hilarious. But unfortunately, this was for real.
Reality.
And they literally were going like this, and he kept talking. You know? The amount of times you heard red shirt, red beret, yellow t-shirt. We thought, well, we're obviously not dressed correctly. There was a large group of people dressed in the Cape Party outfits, and a large group of Cape Party supporters. Not one of them got chosen, not one. The only two Cape Party people who got to speak weren't wearing Cape Party outfits.
And they muscled their way.
But so that, yes. Now, they had no trouble choosing people openly dressed as EFF and ANC, but they didn't choose one person wearing a blue DA shirt or a white Cape Party shirt. So plainly, there was a political agenda and a bias there. And there's just no credibility because it looked to us that a lot of people brought there just to make noise. So we heard that many of these rent-a-crowd, Buston masses, who plainly weren't from the Cape, overwhelmingly not. I mean, most couldn't even speak Afrikaans or English. They were there just to get Kentucky Fried Chicken and McDonald's.
On our taxpayers' money.
Yes, just across the road from this new venue, because they were advertising for weeks it was going to be in the Cape Town Parliament, which is what we're expecting.
Which would make sense.
Then I heard from someone else, no, it's going to be in a church in Goodwin. Now, church in Goodwin, doesn't the government have enough buildings? I mean, they've got municipal buildings, they've got city halls, and it's going to end up in the church. Why? Well, this church was right opposite the road from Kentucky Fried Chicken and McDonald's. So at lunchtime, you couldn't believe the scene. It's like there was a mass order. Not hundreds, thousands of Kentucky Fried and McDonald's litter just littering the whole grounds. It was trashed. It was absolutely disgusting. I don't know what the church was paid for renting out the venue, but it couldn't possibly have paid for the cleanup in time for Sunday service the next day. Shocking, absolutely shocking. But the majority of people there weren't interested in listening, let alone speaking. They were just there to make sure that the bulk of Cape Townians didn't get in and have a chance to speak. And here's the other interesting thing. Every time an EFF person started mouthing meaningless political rhetoric and slogans, everyone was silent and listened. The moment somebody started saying something intelligent or trying to communicate anything as to why this wasn't working, so on, they were shouted down. So the noise in the background, and you've seen just some of the video clips showed just now, you could not believe the agitation and the chairman allowing it.
That's what completely astounded me, is that they can't even control or govern a group of people. How are they supposed to run a whole country if they can't even...
can't handle 2,000 people at one venue.
Exactly, that's what I mean.
And why have 2,000 people at this venue if only 80 are going to have a chance to speak anyway? 100 at max, if they governed it properly.
2 to 3 minutes.
So why would you let in more than 100, 200 people maybe? But no, they choose a venue that can seat 2,000 to have 2,000 people there so that they can deliberately ignore the people, first of all, keep hundreds out who were coming there to give testimonies, and flood it with, a lot of it were actually just kids who had no interest in even listening. Many of them were just sleeping inside there. The main goal was to fill a venue. So it was as blatant as anything. This was an agitprop mob rule, typical French Revolution type idea. This is the way communists operate in order to pretend, just like they just pretended to have an election in Zimbabwe. They pretend to have hearings in Cape Town and around the country. But meanwhile, they've already made the decision. Because Cyril Ramaphosa announced, well, we're going to do expropriation without compensation anyway. He announced on Tuesday, before any of the hearings in the Cape had taken place. So, what is he saying is, we don't care what you say. This is just for show.
Yeah, that truly is appalling. So as you said earlier on, it's just fraud, failure, and a farce. Because even you could see on the panel that half of the, especially the DA people, would go get up, stroll off, weren't listening, weren't taking notes on their cell phones. How are they supposed to accurately make an informed decision or take this information to higher up people? Like, how is that supposed to be fair at all?
Indeed.
If they weren't even paying attention?
I mean, I've never voted for the DA, and I never would, because they're secular humanists and they're pro-abortion and they're pro-pornography and privileges for perverts and many other things. Nevertheless, the DA has been entrusted by the vast majority of Cape Town citizens and ratepayers as their representatives. I think any DA supporter would have been horrified to be there, to see how they were completely absent, silent, weren't involved. They didn't even, on a point of order, urge the chairman to respect the people speaking and not allow them to be heckled and to be abused and to be threatened. This is meant to be a parliamentary sitting. That's what they kept telling us. This is like we're in parliament. You must observe the rules. But they were allowed to threaten, heckle, shout, scream, make political slogans, and drown out people who are trying to have their say. So if anyone wants to say, well, you know, we've listened to the people and the people have spoken, nonsense.
Absolutely.
This is the politicians busting a mob to make sure the people couldn't speak.
And then I also saw an article on News 24 in which they said, as has become customary at the hearings, white speakers all opposed the amendment. How irresponsible is that for journalism? And as you say, just that is like racial propaganda, if I've ever heard it. And then later on continued and say, a coloured man said this, and what does any of this actually have to do with race? It's about land ownership and not listening yes. and to the lies, the manipulation.
That's
has nothing to do with race.
Totally untrue. Anyway, there were quite a number of whites who identified themselves as EFF or ANC, who were, of course, totally for this.
Mm-hmm.
So you had the Stockholm Syndrome white people who were as commie as the next person.
Mm-hmm.
And you had a lot of the coloured people and the Griquas and the San and the Khoi, who were overwhelmingly against interfering with the constitutional safeguards of Section 25 and were against this expropriation without compensation. And quite a lot of the Griquas, San, Khoi and others pointed out this is an absolute farce, and that you, pointing to the ANC, you're the land invaders, you're the ones who've come here, you don't belong in the Cape, you never were here before, you've come to take our land, you've come to take our homes, you've come to take our property, you come here to murder our people, and you should get out of here because you're the thieves. And so there were some people talking quite straight. If anyone wanted to go there and say, oh, this is totally racist, I mean, all the whites said this and all the blacks said, no, not at all. There are blacks who've opposed this, there are whites who've supported it. And so on no side can you say this is exactly a racial issue. This is an issue between communism
mm-hmm.
and socialism, or free enterprise and private ownership property. It's not something that delineates on race at all, because we saw people on both sides of every race. So no.
That's not what they'd want you to
but
think.
That they would say that, it just indicates, again, the irresponsibility of the media trying to encourage race hatred.
Exactly.
There's no hope for this country if we follow the politics of race and hatred.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, it looks like some of the press are agitating for that.
Yeah, sure. That is appalling. So now, everyone's talking about then the amendment to the Constitution. And so what exactly do they mean by this? What are they trying to amend? What are they trying to change?
Right. We've got a Section 25 of the Constitution, which says that no one will be deprived of their land without fair and just compensation, according to market prices and so on. Now, it leaves lots of room for land reform, land redistribution. There's all sorts of things that's provided for in the Constitution, which this government could have done. What they're after is to remove the nobody can be deprived of land without just and fair compensation in terms of the market values. Now, the government's got the money for it, because they spend vastly more money on VIP protection for the members of parliament than they do on land reform. They have allocated less than 15 billion rand to land reform, but they allocate more than 15 billion to their VIP protection of members of parliament, police protection. Not only that, but they bail out SAA in the last 18 months to the tune of 15 billion rand. So South African Airways needs to get bailed out with taxpayers' money, and SAA is not exactly handing out tickets for free.
No.
So how do they run at a loss? Well, corruption and mismanagement, obviously. But not in that, but Eskom, or Ishkom, as many call it, they are bailed out by the hundreds of billions. So if the government would just apportion some of their wastage and some of their socialist nonsense and a little bit of their corruption, if they just allocate a bit more of that to land reform, they could solve it. But they've got over 4,300 farms that they have already taken from white farmers through willing buyer, willing seller process over the last 24 years that have not yet been allocated to any black owners. So as many people, coloured people in particular, pointed out, we don't trust the government to handle this, because you're not talking about taking land away from one person, giving it to another. You're talking about taking away land and putting it in the hands of the state and leasing it to individuals who will be at the beck and call of the government and who could have the lease cancelled any time. This is the way it's being phrased. This is the way it's being advocated by the EFF and ANC. Not redistribution of land to other owners, but that the state controls all the land and everyone becomes tenants, serfs, if you like, on the government plantation. So that this is actually a recipe for slavery. And that's what exactly happened in Mengistu's Ethiopia, in Patrice Lumumba's Congo, in Neto's Angola, in Samora Machel's Mozambique, in Stalin's Russia, in Mao Zedong's China. They're not talking about changing the ownership papers. They're talking about the government taking all the land to themselves. So what you're talking about is the government, who can't run a municipality properly, who can't keep the lights on, who can't keep the water flowing properly. They cannot deal with sewage. They cannot deal with deforestation or crime or pollution or litter, but trust them to run the entire agricultural sector. And they won't be as incompetent at it as they've been in everything else. They won't be as corrupt in agriculture as they've been in every other area. They'll run it as well as they're running Ishkom and SAA, or maybe that's a problem. So when you look at this, this is just socialist redistribution from people, from private ownership in the hands of state ownership. And that is what I think many of the people who are dancing in the streets advocating are saying, we for amendment, they don't understand that they think they're going to get those farms. They don't realize that the only people who are going to get it are the politicos.
Exactly. And also what's scary is that in Section 25, it says that we always talk about expropriation without compensation, talking about land. But in that clause, it says property. It doesn't say land. So it's any private property. It's any business. It's any house. It's any home. It's not just farms.
It can even be your car.
It can be literally
even your cell phone.
Anything, exactly, that they can just then
it's property. That is correct.
Compensation.
Section 25 deals with private ownership property and security of property, which every economy and civilized society needs, respect for life and property and contracts, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, constitution is the ultimate contract. But what I heard, which was absolutely horrifying, was some people were advocating, we're not just talking about farms, we're talking about the game reserves too. The game reserves need to be, what a good are these game reserves? We don't need these game farms. No, we must invade these game farms too. We need to take this. And this was getting a lot of chairs from the floor. It wasn't just some idiot mouthing off. Do you know, the vast majority of tourists who come to our country are not actually coming to see our squatter camps or to get mugged. They're actually coming to see our animals. They're coming to see the tallest animal in the world, the giraffe, the rhino who fast becoming extinct, the lions, the elephants, the largest animals on earth. They're coming to see our unique animals that you get in Africa, everything from the hippos onwards. And so when they come into South Africa, many are coming for Kruger National Park or any of the game reserves around South Africa, many of them privatized. And if we were to interfere with that, we would kill tourism. Tourism brings 35 billion rand a year into South Africa. 35 billion. Think how many people's jobs and service industries are dependent on tourism. You kill the wildlife reserves, you kill tourism. You kill tourism, you've just destroyed how many hundreds of thousands of people's jobs? Which affects millions of people, if you think of the families dependent on those working in those sectors. Not only that it's a crime against God and his creation and the cultural mandate and stewardship of God's creation, but what this would do for the economy. So what we're dealing with is something highly irresponsible, because every time expropriation without compensation has been implemented, whether you're talking about the Soviet Union, Red China, Ethiopia, Tanzania, Congo, Mozambique, Angola, Zimbabwe, or wherever else, it's always been disastrous. Every single time, the dictator has accumulated more power, he's violated every promise he's made, and then he ends up oppressing the very people he's claimed to be doing this for more than ever before. And the people who were maybe dancing in the streets and agitating for what the political party was promising them, they end up more poor, starving, or fleeing as refugees to other countries. And what land expropriation always does is it evicts capable, experienced farmers from land that their families have carved out of the wilderness, out of thorn bushes, and cultivated this land, which now not only feeds the people in the cities, but exports and provides foreign exchange and many other things like that. And what land expropriation always does is it curtails food production. It creates hardship. It creates unemployment. It leads to starvation in the cities, because most people in the cities may not be aware of it, but the food in your shops actually come from the countryside, from the farms. Many people think, no, but doesn't it come from Pick and Pay? Yes, but Pick and Pay needs to get from the farms.
From the farms. Exactly.
They may not have realized that. They might think that, milk comes from a fridge, but actually it comes from cows. And farming is hard work. And it takes expertise and it takes experience. And what I've discovered, especially listening to these politicos mouthing off their meaningless slogans that they, in many cases, couldn't possibly have understood. Those people advocating expropriation without compensation, they don't want to farm. They don't want to get up early with the chickens before dark and before dawn and plow the fields and milk the cows. They just want to loot this farm. They want to burn the homes and smash the equipment and go back to their cities and watch TV.
Exactly. I mean,
basically, what we are dealing with is people who are convinced that they're going to be richer and empowered, but meanwhile, they're going to be starving and they're going to be disempowered and unemployed and probably refugees in another country as a result.
Yeah, this isn't being done to develop the local farms or develop the people. It's done to ensure that the ANC stays in power. And this is evidence. But if you don't know your history, it might look like that it's an honest commitment to uplifting the people in SA. But unfortunately, this couldn't be further from the truth. And all we have to do is, as you've said earlier, look at all the dozens of communist states and dictators which have done this exact same thing in the past, just like Mugabe and like Stalin. And we can see the wake of destruction that follows it. And unfortunately, the same is happening here in SA, and the ANC is failing all of us, all South Africans, but we are going to be the ones left to pay the price, and the poor people are the ones that are going to end up being affected most.
Yes, you're so right, Eamon. That's why we've got to speak out against it. We need to. My people are destroyed from lack of knowledge. This is an information war right now. This is a battle for hearts, for minds. We need to speak up. Recent history demonstrates the disaster of government interference in the economy. And recent history demonstrates the disaster of breaking God's commandments. Mm-hmm. Thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not covet the neighbor's goods. Those are there for good reason.
Mm-hmm.
Missionaries are busy caring for the casualties of irresponsible political decisions like these in Zimbabwe, for example, in the Congo. And our missionary work is often consisting of helping people who are casualties of just this kind of irresponsible socialist utopian nonsense, which always results in disaster.
Mm-hmm.
And wherever these socialist experiments have been done, it's resulted in the same kind of disaster. So let's not follow in the footsteps of failure. I'm convinced that as the Southern government is in control of vast lands, more lands than these white farmers who are being targeted right now, which are unoccupied and unproductive, why don't they start by settling and developing those lands that they already have, like over 4,000 farms, and developing those that are unproductive and which are unoccupied now? Why disrupt productive farms and evict experienced farmers? Why not do, in addition, we've got most of the land is actually unoccupied in this country and is in government hands. Why not start with them? But we suspect the present policy of expropriation without compensation is being cynically promoted by people who know it won't work, but they're doing it to distract voters from the failure of government and from the ANC's looting of this country. They're looting this country by excessive taxation, by inflation, and by corruption. And the African Union report is that 25% of the GDP, gross domestic product of Africa, is looted by government corruption. That's a quarter of our total wealth is stolen by government theft. So in our country, we're talking about at least 1 trillion rand is stolen by government every year. And they're wanting to talk about a statue of Van Riebeeck as the source of the problem. We need to love our neighbor, not hate them, not resent them, not covet and envy our neighbor. We need a Christian work ethic, not socialist greed and another failed state. So the billions of rand squandered by the ANC on all of their nonsense, and it would be better spent investing in agriculture and training rural farmers and other entrepreneurs. Do you know that just AFRA SA announced earlier this year in a report in April that they had spent over 330 million rand, now that's private farmers, on empowering over 100,000 black farmers, teaching them entrepreneurial in mentorship partnership schemes. And you can see that private farmers have done more to empower black farmers than the entire South African government has in 24 years. Mm-hmm. And we're just talking about in the last year. Just one group has done this. So AFRA SA. So this eviction of farmers, this expropriation without compensation, it's in violation of our constitution. Mm-hmm. It's illegal by our own Bill of Rights. It's illegal by our laws and international laws. And it's dangerous because it erodes constitutional safeguards. Those constitutional safeguards are set there to protect all of us. And 17 political parties agreed on this constitutional amendment in the CADESA talks leading up to the 1994 elections. And so to want to now throw it away, and basically you've just got two parties, ANC and EFF, who want to throw away what 17 parties agreed on as a resolution, prevention of war, as a peaceful solution, as the way forward. To throw this away now would be catastrophic because it would be breaking our own laws for political opportunism, which everyone knows won't work anyway. Mm-hmm. It would be economic suicide to violate the laws of God and chase away the employers and investors and tourists. It would be insane to destroy our productive agricultural sector, which is one of the few really good things going for us in South Africa.
Well, the thing is that land expropriation without compensation, anything taken without compensation is simply and plainly theft. And no one does business with a thief. Yet that's what the ANC, our communist government, is. And the world is starting to see through that lies and through their lies. And if this continues, our economy is going to collapse. As you've said, it's economic suicide. So it is mandatory that we stop letting ourselves believe these lies because we do actually know better and we need to help others hear the truth too. So because our news programs and even our children's education systems are ensuring that they don't hear the truth, it is so mandatory that we need to put a stop to it and start sharing the lights.
Yes. Now, the average person, I think, who attended any of these hearings might have been so traumatized and so under post-traumatic stress syndrome that they don't know what to do next. And I heard some people saying, I see no hope for our country. And I said, no, that's what they want you to see. But this group was not representative of our country and even less representative of our city.
And as we could see in the News 24, that they even want to try and make it look worse than it is.
Yes. So, no, you mustn't let the communists determine your future and have you lose hope in our future, because we don't put our faith in the politicians. We don't put our faith in any political group or any salvation through politics. Our faith is in God, but He expects us to be salt and light, to be wise, to expose that which is evil, to shine the light on dark deeds like what we're trying to do now and in all of our programs from the front line on our website. But also we're trying to be salt. We're trying to preserve what's good. Mm-hmm. So this expropriation without compensation would be a betrayal. It would be a betrayal of the vision of a united South Africa, a colorblind South Africa, a South Africa where never, never, never again will any South African be discriminated against on the basis of his race. That was the vision that was sold to us in 1994. And now it's a fundamental principle of justice that a person is innocent until proven guilty. And due process of law is essential. No person should be deprived of their property without due process in court, with all reasonable opportunities to defend themselves against any charges. So you cannot pronounce a whole group of people guilty of any crime, yet they are trying to tell us that all white farmers are thieves. Mm. Well, AfriForum has offered 100,000 rand cash to anyone who can prove one white farmer stole his land. And they haven't even tried to take them up on that, even though that offer's been on the go for over a year. Mm. No, it's not rational. It's not fair to pronounce a whole group of people guilty of any crime. In fact, it's not even fair to pronounce one person guilty, even criminal court an act of duty is innocent until proven guilty by due process in the courts. Mm-hmm. So if any individual has stolen or expropriated anything without compensation, let that be tested in court in accordance with the law. Do not do anything against your neighbor that you would not want done to yourself. Do unto others what you want done unto yourself. Mm. That's the teaching of Jesus.
Mm.
So when you talk about restitution, and people talk about restitution, well, restitution is biblical. Restitution must be done by the convicted criminal to the victims, directly to the victims, entirely to the victims. It's not right for people who did not do any crime to be required to do restitution to people who are not the victims.
Mm.
Restitution is not meant to be a scam for politicians to garner votes while they loot the country through corruption, taxation, and inflation. So this restitution claim by these people, they don't even understand the concept. They just use it as a term that they're using to garner votes. But if our government wants to help the poor, stop stealing from them by corruption.
Mm.
If the ANC wants to empower the poor, give them legal title deeds to their own homes so that they can secure loans. Because do you know that the vast majority of black people in this country have not been given title deeds for their own homes and properties? And it's worth something. You can get a loan on a basis of, if they'd be given title deeds. But this government won't even empower their, what they call their own people. But of course, they don't care about them. If the state wants to create jobs and grow the economy, then respect private ownership property. Nothing will create more unemployment and collapse an economy and collapse the currency more than land grabs without compensation. But if they respected private ownership property, it would create more jobs and invite more investment. So don't erode constitutional safeguards and in that way chase away investors. Socialism is the pathway to ruin. They should follow examples of excellence like Switzerland and Singapore, create tax havens, decentralize. But what we shouldn't do is follow in the footsteps of failure.
Mm, yeah, definitely. And what we do need is leaders who fear the Lord. Proverbs 1 verse 7 says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. So we need wise leaders. We need leaders that fear the Lord. And then later on in Proverbs, in chapter 8 verse 13, it says, to fear the Lord is to hate evil. And our government does not fear God, and it does not hate evil. And in fact, as we've seen this weekend, it encourages it and applauds it. So it's absolutely abhorrent. Yet too many Christians are just idly standing by and not speaking up. So we're not taking a stand for it, and we're being passive and inactive. And it's not good enough. We need to be bold enough to take a stand, because all that's necessary for evil to flourish is for good people to do nothing. And unfortunately, that's what too many of us are doing. So we definitely do need to take a stand. And what Dr. Hammond, how are ways that people can take a stand? How are ways that people can help the oppressed, help the poor? How can we stand up for truth?
Right. Be informed. That's the first thing. And we've written some things on this. If you go onto our Henry Morton Stanley School of Christian Journalism website, that's HMS, schoolofchristianjournalism.org. You'll see our Farms and Freedoms Under Fire in South Africa. We've got an audio, we've got an article, we've got it in video format. We've got on the 9 stage of to genocide in South Africa and fearless farmers that fight back. So there's a whole range of good examples of articles that are exposing what's going on. So go and inform yourself and then share them. Share this article, this radio program, and other From the Frontline programs which deal with these issues. You need to, whether it's through social media or through email or just encouraging your friends to log on and to see on our website what we've got here, but get informed and then be interceding. Mobilize your church and your family around dinner table even. Pray for these things. We really need to pray more. Mm. And we need to act. Be involved. So be informed, be interceding, be involved. And there's groups you can join. There are people who are trying to do things positively. Praise God for groups like Afro Forum and Afro SA and the groups like Solidarity are trying to speak up for the people in trouble here. And then there's certain political groups that are trying to speak up for the farmers and for property owners and against this kind of irresponsibility. And in the Cape, we've got the Cape Independence Movement. Certainly, they need to be supported, and we need to do everything we can to get people to stand up, to speak out, to step out in faith, and to fight the good fight of faith. Mm. Let's not be passive.
Let's not be passive or inactive, but let's rather, as you say, take a stand. And in fact, Elijah challenged Israel in 1 Kings 18:21, and he said, "How long will you waver between two opinions? If the Lord is God, serve him. and if Baal is God, serve him. So who are we serving? And even amongst this chaos, we know that we are still serving a God of order. Mm. So let's serve him. Let's take a stand and let's share the truth with those around us.
Yes, indeed. As I was at this parliamentary hearing, as they called it, on Saturday, it came to my mind again thinking that verse in Matthew where our Lord Jesus said, on the last day, every one of us will have to give an account for every idle word ever spoken. And I thought, you know, many of these people here who are just inciting race hatred, genocide, murder, hate, all this, they're going to have to stand before God on the day of judgment. And the Bible says that many will call for the mountains to fall on them. They'd rather be buried under an avalanche than to face the wrath of the Lamb of God on the day of judgment. And these people who don't understand the fear of God need to study the scriptures again, read the book of Revelation, and realize there's a day of judgment coming, and every one of us will stand before God, and we will have to give an account of why we said this or did that, or why we didn't say anything or didn't do anything. And so it will not just be for evil things done that people are judged, but for good things we failed to do.
For sure.
And so on that day, let's understand that the only one worth fearing is God. Jesus said, fear God who could destroy both body and soul in hell forever. Do not fear man who can only kill a body and after that he can do nothing else. Fear God. And the only hope for our country is to humble ourselves, to seek God's face, to pray, and to turn from our wicked ways. And we must fear God. And we've got to turn away from race, politics, and hate and turn to God in humility and prayer. Study the word of God. Get serious about church. And get our family and friends and co-workers and people at school or college, wherever it may be, together for Bible study and prayer. Let's be part of the solution instead of part of the problem in this country.
Exactly. Yeah. Let's stop standing around and saying, somebody do something. Let's unite and let's us do something together. Thank you very much, Dr. Hammond. Good night.